Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil, and today we are making history. The first time we've ever had a part three to the mailbag. This is a special day.
It's a momentous occasion. And again, indicative of the incredible listenership that we have.
And leadership. Yeah.
Let's be honest here. And listenership that they're willing and invested in all of our podcasts. We appreciate so much. We love getting all these questions from our fans and listeners, and keep them coming, because we'll do a fourth one, a historic fourth podcast in a week. I mean, that's – look, it's a slow NBA season. Obviously, not much going on other than the NBA Finals, but there's the draft to look forward to, potential free agency, roster shakeups, the questions about your team, and if you have them, we want to answer them for you.
We're going to hit on all that stuff, so let's start with the first question. This comes from Ethan Huffman. How do you guys feel about Jabari Parker going forward? His second ACL tear is a concern, but if the Bucks play hardball with him, is he a scoopable option next offseason? Or perhaps able for trade if they don't offer him a big extension and he gets disgruntled this offseason? This is a really interesting question, because this is something I've been thinking about, the whole Jabari Parker situation. I can't remember who it was that Pat Riley originally traded. Wasn't it Alonzo Mourning who was up for an extension? Maybe it was Alonzo Mourning, or maybe it was Hardaway. Somebody was up for an extension, and the team that he was on wasn't feeling totally great about it. Pat Riley came.
It was Hardaway.
It was Hardaway, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he had knee problems in Golden State, and they were questioning whether or not to offer him a lot of money as he was entering a contract year, and that's where they included him and Billy Owens to the Heat.
That's right. So this is one, and Riley's done it. Well, plenty of people have done it, and it's sometimes hit and sometimes hasn't hit, but right. Hardaway, obviously, it paid off for the Heat. It's a classic option for getting guys on a lesser value, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the case of Hardaway, you know, obviously we heard a lot about this after the fact, but, you know, Miami was actually able to get him into a better playing shape. They had him lose weight. They had those strict dietary limits and weight limits and body fat restrictions and things of that sort. And that was able to prolong his career because he carried less weight, so it was less pressure on his knee, et cetera. I don't know with Jabari. It's probably a different situation. Look, from what I've heard, and refresh my memory, but I think he's expected to come back probably in the second half of the season if he makes a full recovery. From what I've heard, it's already going well. I think he's ahead of schedule as far as his recovery is concerned. So I guess at this point, it's just starting to rehab and get to that point where he might be able to step onto the floor again.
Yeah, that combination, Parker and Giannis Antetokounmpo for Milwaukee last season, was special for the amount of time it was on the floor. And that was without Middleton, right? And then they got Middleton back, Parker, and then Parker was gone. They were playing with two of those three guys all season. The three of those guys together is going to be special for the Bucks. But it makes sense also that they might want to move on from Parker. Look, they've got Thon McCur, who kind of came along in the playoffs and towards the tail end of the season. He's presumably your center if you're going to be playing this big, long, athletic, strange lineup, right? He's your center. Giannis is your power forward nominally, I guess, kind of your point guard, whatever. You've got Middleton. You know, maybe you're still looking. You've got a bunch of players on that roster.
Let me ask you a question. You watched the Bucks in the playoffs, obviously.
Yeah.
In your estimation, what do you think they were missing as far as able to knock off the Toronto Raptors? Were they just too young? You think it's Parker?
I think defensively. They just had so many holes defensively. I think it's youth. Parker would have helped. I don't think they would have won that series even with Jabari Parker. Right. It's just they've got – they're so young, you know what I mean? Like, they're so raw defensively. Like, the more time they get in that system, because it's a really it's a pretty intensive defensive scheme that they run. Not to get too in the weeds about it, but they do a lot of switching. It's not what the Heat run, where everything's basically right in front of you. Just keep guys off the 3-point line, and you have Hassan Whiteside to protect the rim. It's a lot of like what the Heat used to do with the big three, where everybody's got to be on a rope, right? And that's a really good system when it's a bunch of veterans who are savvy defensively and understand what they got to do. It's a lot harder when you're a young team, and that's what the Bucks are, right? They want to own the future. That's their slogan. They're practicing now for 3 and 4 years down the road, presumably. And right. So the more they're in the system, the better they get. But right now they're just so raw at it that they leak too much. But if they're uncertain about Jabari Parker and his health moving forward, and you could flip him in a trade for assets that are young, healthy, and could still improve. It's not like the Bucks don't have holes that they need to fill. They need backcourt help pretty badly, right? They need guys who can actually run the offense. Matthew Dellavedova wasn't the player that they hoped. Malcolm Brogdon, who's a nice player, could win Rookie of the Year, but he's not the answer to your entire backcourt. Middleton's a really good player, but does he project more as a three and Giannis as a four? I don't know. You know what I mean? Giannis might even be playing center for this team. Who knows? It depends on what the Bucks are looking for, but if they are looking to sell high on Jabari Parker, and that might be the case right now, he really and he's up for an extension. They have to decide to pay him or not, right? Yeah. So
this was his third season, and he's entering into his fourth contract year as a restricted free agent.
There's two situations, three ways that the Bucks can go with this. They can offer him the big extension, right? Lock him up at something close to a max.
Right.
They could get lucky and say, look, this is your second ACL injury, dude. Like, you've played one full season your whole career. It doesn't look promising for you to play another full season next year. We're not giving you a big, the big extension. And then they could get lucky and end up with a Steph Curry-like extension where he becomes one of the best values in the NBA at 12 or 13, 14 million a year, whatever it would be. Like Curry did, because he had all those ankle issues early in his career.
Right.
And then the third option, of course, is they could trade him or let him walk next to, or not extend him and let him walk. If you don't extend him, though, you do run the risk of having to pay him a lot more money next year or he leaves in as a free agent, right? So
right.
If they're not willing to make the extension offer now, a team could, like the Heat or another team, could come in and say, look, what's your price for Jabari Parker? And then kind of start playing ball that way, right?
It seems tough, though, because I don't think he's expected back until right before the trade deadline. So you're taking a chance. If they're going to move him before he enters restricted free agency, it would have to be in February at the trade deadline. And I don't know that they'll have seen enough from him either behind the scenes or in practice to make a thorough estimate as to how he projects, whether or not they're concerned about him incurring any further injury in the future or something along those lines. And then if they're willing to move him, isn't that kind of a red flag for every other team? They're like, wait a minute, what haven't they seen or what have they seen from him that they're worried about and they're looking to move him, and that they'll take basically anything as far as a value in exchange?
What if they're not taking anything? What if they say, look, we love Parker, we've got Giannis, we've got Middleton, Tony Snell is coming along. We feel like we could trade him now with Thon McCur. You know, we got these young guys. We feel like we could trade him now and get some value of need, maybe in the backcourt, which is a bigger position of need than forward for us.
Right.
Are they willing to listen to an offer, say the 14th pick, Tyler Johnson and Josh Richardson? You know what I mean? Is that something that they're willing to listen to? And if that's the case, and Jabari Parker turns out to be to live up to the expectations he has, and even just play like he was pre-injury,
right?
That could be a win for the Heat. You know what I mean? Like, and best case scenario, Parker plays small ball four, stretch four in the modern NBA. That could be a position of need for the Heat, or you could still play him as a big small forward over Winslow and give the unit a real offensive stalwart. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I personally am disinclined to take a chance on a guy who's blown out that same knee twice over the first 3 years of his career, as good as he came back from it. And look, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but I had a chance to talk with him and I asked him about the injury, and he knew when he got hurt that he was going to come back stronger, bigger, better, et cetera. And he did. to his credit, he actually managed to pull that off. And I'm sure he's had that same level of confidence now. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate. And look, he's lucky enough that he's young, where he can make these kinds of comebacks now, as opposed to 5 or 6 years down the line, where it's going to be increasingly harder for it to happen. But you wonder whether or not Miami's willing to take a chance like that. He's a hell of a scorer. He does have legitimate three-point range. He can still put the ball down. He's big and strong enough. I think Miami would probably get him to another level physically if they were able to acquire a guy like that, have him, help him trim some of the excess fat a little bit and get him to a prime playing shape. Mm-hmm. And they could turn him to a – I think they could turn him into a legitimate defender. He has holes defensively where he basically just kind of loses focus there. He'd be a hell of a player, and obviously – the guy you build your team around for the future, but the question is going to be his health. And I don't know if you make a move for a guy like that. I mean, you wouldn't want to give up too much.
Yeah, and that's the question, right? You can't give up too much. I wouldn't give up Winslow. But if I could give up the 14th pick in Tyler Johnson, I'd do it.
Just to shed Tyler's contract.
Or just because I think he's probably worth more than Josh Richardson. But if Milwaukee wanted more, if Milwaukee preferred Josh Richardson, I would probably do the 14th pick and Josh Richardson for Jabari Parker. I actually might even do both of those. I'd probably do Tyler Johnson and Richardson in the 14th pick for Parker. I just look at what the Heat, what options do they have to land a franchise-changing player? And if you could get, I think Jabari Parker has that potential. He's got the capability.
I don't
probably
know about that.
Better than anybody at 14. He was playing at an all-star level before he got injured again. And the big question
I don't know
is
if he's
bounces back. But
I don't think he's a building block. I think he's more of a complementary player.
I think he might be a building block. Just the way he can score, how young he still is, how athletic he is. I mean, this is a guy who, what was he? He was picked at like number 2 or something, right? Jabari Parker?
Yeah, he was.
I mean, this is a guy who has all of the talent to be a building block. I don't know if he will be, but I really like him as a player, and I don't know what other options the Heat have to find a franchise-changing player. I mean, in free agency, it might not happen. It probably won't happen, right? At the 14th pick, it's likely not happening. We talk about Giannis being picked at 15, Kawhi being picked at 15 all the time. Chances are you're not, though, right? Those are exceptions, not rules. For the 14th pick and a guard, and one of the Miami's backup guards, or both of them, it's a really small price to pay for that opportunity. I don't know.
No, I guess and would you swing that trade like on draft day, knowing that he's hurt?
You'd have
still,
to.
Still, he's not going
to
play for most
it,
of next season.
You'd have to do it after they pick at 14.
And that's fine. I mean, you're basically going to lose out on whatever player you wind up trading. You lose out on his services for the first half of the season, and hope that you with monitoring Jabari's comeback, that you're able to kind of gauge how he'll shake up for the rest of next season if he plays at all. And then you can make a solid offer, and you have his rights as far as restricted free agency is concerned. You know what to offer him. You know you can control the market. I think, and that's the case with Milwaukee too. They have the ball fully in their court. They can control any number of options. Either they can trade him because they don't want to invest in his future. They can lowball the offer to him because, again, they don't think he's ever going to pan out or recover fully from that injury. Or they can pay him as much as they think he deserves, which is probably a considerable amount.
Yeah, it depends also who's at 14. Like, if Larry Markkanen's sitting there at 14 somehow, I might keep him just because of the fit there. And I maybe wouldn't move that for Parker. But if it's
Who's the guy that Milwaukee would probably want at 14?
OJ Anunoby.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
So if he's sitting there at 14, could you flip Anunoby, Richardson, and Johnson for Parker?
Straight up, I don't even know that you'd have to include that much. I mean, from their perspective, maybe, I guess. Now, they don't have a first-round pick. Now, what if you
They do.
You
they
swing
have a
17th
the... pick.
They do?
Milwaukee has a 17th pick.
Oh. Would they include that first-round pick for that package? No? They hold on to the 17th pick.
You might be able to get a second-round pick out of it.
I don't know that you'd give up two backup players and then lose the first-rounder as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's something that had to work out, but that would probably be the core of the trade there.
What if you swing the deal that we talked about in our previous podcast with Portland, where you acquire two of their first rounders and possibly Festus Ezeli You take that back for the 14th pick. And then all of a sudden you have two first rounders. You ship the 15th to Milwaukee, but you still say have the 20th or 26th pick, whatever Portland wants to include in that deal.
You sound like Andy Ellsberg right now. This is some masterminding stuff right now. Yeah.
You've got a first round pick from Portland that's a second round talent that you've been evaluating anyway. You get Festus Ezeli in the deal. You ship out Tyler Johnson in the 14th to Milwaukee, or Tyler Johnson in the 15th, which you acquired from Portland, to Milwaukee.
Maybe.
And then you get Jabari Parker in exchange.
A lot of ACL injuries on one team.
You got Jabari. But in the future, you can sign Jabari. You can re-sign Festus. You get Jabari, Festus Ezeli. You get younger, longer, better.
I think you get better with Parker.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And you keep Winslow in the trade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
It's done. next question from Sam Danes. Hey, here's a really good article from SI on some draft sleepers / 3-and-D wing players. And then
you're gonna have to trust us on that. It was a really good article.
Yeah, it's on SI.com. I mean, you can find it. I think several of these guys would fit great on the Heat. We'd have to somehow acquire a second round pick, but that shouldn't be too difficult. Like Sam's talking about, and we've mentioned a few times on the show, Miami has $3.1 million, something like that, and that they're able to spend in trades. A lot of time teams use that money. Every team has something around $30 million a year to add in cash for trades. A lot of times teams use that money to acquire second-round picks. You basically buy second-round picks from other teams that don't want them. That could be a situation that that Miami could do that basically to get a second-round pick and acquire one of these guys who this SI article talked about. I'll just list them off. It's Sterling Brown from SMU, Devon Reed, who we should know from Miami, Devin Robinson from Florida. I'm going to do my best on this. Costa Mushida from Belgium, Nick Slavica from Croatia, and then Deonte Burton of Iowa State. Now, I don't know, David, if you have a particularly strong interest in any of these guys, but the guy that stands out to me is Devin Reed from Miami.
Yeah, I agree there. You could make a case for Brown, I think, from SMU, but Devon Reed looks like the more complete player, I think, and he's got incredible length, athleticism.
Almost 7 feet wingspan.
Yeah, great outside shooting. That's a project, and it'd be a feel-good case where you know, he's not exactly a local guy, but he played locally, so you can kind of keep him in the fold. He's probably used to the Miami environment, so I think that would be a nice fit for him, and certainly a great opportunity to develop a young player who's probably under the radar. I don't think, you know, Miami didn't do much as far as the NCAA is concerned, so they didn't exactly make a huge name for themselves in the tournament or anything. So you get a guy who probably flies under the radar, who might have built up a little bit more, attention had they gone further in the tournament or something along those lines. But, you get him on the cheap and you can possibly develop him again. You know, ship him to the D-League, have him work there with a system that's proven to get the most out of players. And I think you really get a good find there.
These are the guys, these 3-and-D guys, are the ones that tend to slip in the draft but always have, like, the biggest impact.
Right.
On their teams, and we keep seeing, you know, big centers end up getting taken in this first round, where center is kind of a prehistoric position now, right? Like, why would you take a Jared Allen out of Texas, where you can get a guy who could defend on the perimeter on multiple positions, like Devon Reed or Devin Robinson or any of these guys, and then hit open three-pointers? That, to me, is a more valuable thing in the NBA these days than a big lumbering center. But those big lumbering centers are going to be selected higher than these guys in a lot of mock drafts they have been, and probably in the real draft they're going to be. But these guys just kind of slide into the second round of these mock drafts that I've been reading. I don't know if they're going to slide in the second round of the NBA draft. Maybe this is the year the NBA turns a corner and says, look at the teams that are in the NBA Finals. We need more guys that can shoot threes, and we need less guys that can get rebounds. And if that's the case, these guys might not fall into the second round. A guy like Devon Reed could end up being selected in the first round. It wouldn't surprise me. He's long. He's athletic. He can make open three-pointers. He could defend multiple guys on the perimeter. I also like Devin Robinson out of Florida. Sterling Brown at SMU, I haven't looked a lot into him. But he's one of these 3-and-D guys, according to SI. He fits this mold again. I don't know that Miami could take one of them at 14. Maybe they could buy themselves in the second round, but these guys might be like fringe first round guys. If the Heat are looking at one of these guys, it might even be like a late first round pick, but if you can get yourself into the second round, you're probably able to land one of these guys. And we talked on the last podcast about them might maybe buying themselves in the second round and taking a backup center as insurance for Willie Reed leaving, possibly in free agency.
Yeah.
But I'd actually prefer them to do this, to get into the second round and take one of these guys, because these are the guys that end up making a difference in the NBA sooner rather than later. Centers are so hit or miss in the NBA. These guys, I mean, at the very least, they should be able to hit an open three for you. I don't know why they're so low, though. Maybe it's athleticism and size that isn't there. That's why they're not first round picks.
I don't really know either. I think I mean, I think a guy like Reed, you know, arguably has both of those things. Yeah. So I'm not sure exactly why he's slipping again. Maybe it's just the lack of attention that Miami got, and maybe the fact that they didn't really stand out as far as the tournament is concerned. I mean, guys have to slip invariably. You've only got 60 picks. You know, you got to hit on as many as possible, and you want to take a guy maybe at that center position who's more of a stretch player, who has a little bit more obvious length and size to him already. I guess. I mean, if you're gonna have to put five guys on the floor, you want to have a center or a big man at least who can probably space it a little bit better, and so you'd want to have somebody like that to complement four maybe more well-established shooters. I'm not sure exactly what the case might be for these guys.
Best case scenario for me would be Lauri Markkanen fall on a 14. You take him, you buy your way into the second round and take Devon Reed, and that would be the best case scenario for me, because then Markkanen could play some backup five for you. You could still go out and find some cheap centers. James Johnson, you sign him. Yeah, I think you could find somebody like pretty lousy. You can call up Keith Benson if you just need a traditional side type center. But really, James Johnson, Markkanen would be your backup fives and small ball lineups. And I think instead of having Willie Reed and having another traditional center, your backup is also the introduction to a small ball unit into the game. And then you kind of run with it like that for 12, 15 minutes a game with small ball units. And then you're able to get somebody like Reed, who would also complement a small ball unit because he could defend on the perimeter and hit open threes.
I mean, they've got an inside track on the scouting there. I'm sure they can talk to Coach Jim Larrañaga over at UM and get exactly what they need to know about Devon and whether or not they think he fits into their system. So, I mean, that's an added plus.
All right, we're going to get to our third question here. But first, do you want to be part of the fastest-growing sports podcast network? The Locked On Podcast Network is hiring a national sales manager to sell the NBA channel, NFL channel, and the entire network to national advertisers. If you have the skills, the perseverance, and the game to be part of the Locked On Podcast Network, email lockedonpodcasts@gmail.com with your resume. That's lockedonpodcasts@gmail.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Here's our next question, also from Ethan. Do you guys remember Andrea Bargnani?
Who?
If he has any interest in being an NBA player, I like the idea of him as our backup center for 10 to 15 minutes a game. This will really test Heat culture. But he's got a game for this team, especially if you pair him with lineups in lineups with our athletes, James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, to cover some of his previous rebounding deficiencies.
It's almost as like, okay, I'll tell a story here. And maybe it applies or not, but you know, my wife, when I first met her, you know, obviously she was just my girlfriend at the time. She came to my apartment, saw that I had a container. I can't even remember what I want to say. It might have been sour cream, and she looked at the container, and obviously it was past the expiration date, being the single guy that I was, and she was like, "I'm going to toss it out." I was like, "No, no." No, I want to see where this goes. I want to see how far the science experiment can go before we actually toss it out. Of course, she didn't give a damn about my desire for a science experiment. I wound up tossing it out anyway. But I think Ethan's point here, and this was a long-winded explanation, not to prove that I was disgusting, but rather that to test Heat culture, this would be the ultimate test for it, right? To take a guy who's out of the league for two seasons, who couldn't function at a high level when he was in the league, you know, years ago, who has no interest or desire or ability to play defense at a high level and basically has one skill, and even that a particularly bad one, which is shooting from the perimeter at a fairly tall size.
I can't add anything to this. You just compared Andrea Bargnani to expired sour cream.
Yes.
I can't. That's it. All right. I agree 100% with everything you just said. I can't add anything to that. We had a very similar question about Bargnani. We had a similar question to this about Anthony Bennett.
Right.
Last week. And it's the same thing. A lot of people say this guy was taken with the first pick in the draft. He's long and he can shoot threes, presumably, even though that there's no record other than their college stats and international stats that say that they can. In the NBA, they weren't able to do that. The risk isn't... I mean, people look at this as a low-risk, high-reward, right? You're low risk because they'll sign for anything just to be back into the NBA.
Sure.
High reward because maybe that talent that was there when they were selected in the draft will show up once they're in Miami. It is the ultimate test of Heat culture. There is a risk, right? The risk is that you're holding out another roster spot for the next Roddy Magruder. And I would rather have the next Roddy Magruder than the next Derek Williams.
Hell, I would rather have the current Luke Babbitt over the potential Andrea Bargnani.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. There's just... I would rather use that spot in training camp or on the roster for somebody who went undrafted this year, who has more potential. As you said, it's expired goods. These are expired goods. And it's not, you can't reverse sour cream. Like, you just can't.
I tried, Wes.
So, all right, final question. Here's a trade scenario that came to us on Twitter by Robert Smith. The Heat send Tyler Johnson to the Lakers for D'Angelo Russell and Larry Nance Jr. Now, you and I kind of picked this apart a little bit as kind of a classic overvaluing your own players and undervaluing other players. But I don't think the idea of the Lakers trading D'Angelo Russell is out of the question. I mean, if they do go out and draft Lonzo Ball or De'Aaron Fox with the second pick in the draft, there might be a market via trade for D'Angelo Russell. And if that's the case, maybe a guy like Tyler Johnson, Robert Smith went on to acknowledge this in his full tweet at us. I just didn't include it here. But that, look, he's a better defender. He's probably better off ball than Russell is. He's a true shooting guard, where Russell's probably best utilized as a point guard. And if you bring in a point guard, you could have conflicting interests there. I think this is the start of a possible trade, but not the end of it. Miami would have to include a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, Nance started a lot of their season at power forward or even coming off the bench. You know, he played a vital role for the few wins that the Lakers were able to amass. And he's a high energy guy. He's got a proven pedigree. I hate using that term, but I mean, let's say his background is a strong one considering his dad played in the league and he has what it takes. He knows and he understands the grind of the league and he should be a real hard worker and a very valuable commodity there. So I don't think that they would trade two guys, potential starters that have, again, more potential to fulfill as individual players. At such a young age, making so little money for a guy like Tyler. I mean, whereas Tyler's probably a more proven player, you can't dismiss the concerns about the contract. I just don't think that the Lakers are going to say, yeah, let's take a guy like Tyler Johnson, who's going to get paid $20 million in 2 years, who's better now than D'Angelo Russell, but probably will never be as good as D'Angelo Russell could be. I just don't see that. So, I mean, I'm not sure what kind of a deal Miami could possibly swing. Look, we talked about this too. A lot of that would probably hinge on Pat Riley's relationship with Irvin Magic Johnson. And I don't know that Magic is going to get fleeced like this for you know, two first round or two young players like Russell and Nance. So I'm not sure what Miami could possibly include. It would probably have to be a bigger, larger deal. And I'm sure the Lakers would probably want to ship Timofey Mozgov or something like that, somebody exactly to get off right. their books. Look.
Well, yeah, you're right, to offset that ballooning Tyler Johnson contract. That's what it would take. If the Heat wanted to get D'Angelo Russell, who was, what, the second pick in the draft a few years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, this is a dude with a lot of potential. So even if Tyler Johnson does technically fit what the Lakers want to do better, the Lakers aren't good enough, and they're not in a situation where they say, look, we need guys that fit what we do better. They just need to – they're a bad team right now. And bad teams need to accumulate as much talent as possible and then figure out where, like, the pieces fall into place. And Russell is more talented than Tyler Johnson. And Larry Nance Jr. is a really nice player for them and not somebody that they just throw in a deal. But if – if we're going to kind of play and see where this is going to go and how a deal would get done, you're exactly right. They're going to have to throw in Timofey Mozgov or Lou Alding, right, to counteract the Tyler Johnson ballooning contract.
Right.
And they'd have to include D'Angelo Russell, I guess, if that's what we're trying to get in return. You might have to get Larry Nance Jr. out of this deal. But, I mean, Tyler Johnson and Josh McRoberts for Lou Alding, D'Angelo Russell, Larry Nance Jr., Miami probably has to include the 14th pick in the draft.
Yeah.
If that's what it would take, right?
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm sure Miami doesn't want to pay Lou that kind of money as much as they appreciate. I think they probably prefer having Mozgov, and that's only if they can move Whiteside. I there's no way.
And then you're moving Whiteside for D'Angelo Russell, which would be insane, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, and look, they're going to get Paul George either at some point this season or in the following offseason. So they've already been told theoretically or reportedly that not to move any of their assets, because they're going to be able to acquire George at some point in the future. And so I think you'd rather have young players like Russell and Larry Nance, who doesn't need the ball in his hands but can create and do things and drive to the rim and play with effort and intensity. You know, one of the few guys on the Lakers roster, I think, who's willing and able to show that on a regular basis. I don't think you'd want to move those two guys.
Yeah, and I'm not sure this is a trade that happens. And I agree with you. There's no reason to move Russell. He's got such a high trade value, too. I mean, that wouldn't make sense. But you mentioned Riley and Magic's relationship. Do you think there is a trade that could happen between the Lakers and the Heat? Like, just be based on that relationship? Are the Lakers, I don't know that they're willing to move pieces around, but if the Heat get on the phone, Riley's gotten in, right?
Oh, without a doubt. Now, you wonder, how does it work out as far as the relationship between Magic and Rob Pelinka? Who's control of what? I mean, I don't know that there's any kind of clarification, or at least not one that I'm fully aware of. But I would imagine that relationship, look, I mean, Riley's probably dealt with Pelinka as an agent when he was one. So I'm sure that there's a relationship between both of those guys there. And of course, there's a strong relationship, friendship, mentorship between Johnson and Riley. I'm sure that provides an added incentive. As far as what potential trades could work out in the future, I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
And unless they're soured on Brandon Ingram and they're looking to move him for something cheap, I just don't even see where that works out.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast, thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. To support the show, make sure you download every episode and follow Locked On Heat on Twitter. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. I'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.